Welcome to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. I am Chris Graham, and Jerry Ratcliffe is we're on Zoom right now. The audio of this is great, and I get to see Jerry through the Zoom. And Jerry, it's great to see your face again.
Great to see you also, Chris. I wish we could get together a little bit more like we do in normal times, but this is better than nothing, right?
This is better than nothing, and hey, that's coming soon. I live near a country club, so I'm sure I can get you come over and play some golf, and we can have some drinks after, and that'd be a good thing. That's something to look forward to this summer, actually.
Absolutely.
And talking some UVA sports, and maybe we should record those conversations too. They'd be really good ones. We're going to talk on this show today. We have Siobhan Statuta from UVA Sports Medicine. We're going to talk about running this time of year, of course, with the great weather. It's great to get out and walk and run and play golf, and you got to get yourself ready for that, though. Take baby steps, and we'll talk with Siobhan about that. We'll also talk with the folks at Blue Ridge Bank a little later in the show. But Jerry, we got some basketball recruiting news to catch up on. No good news or bad news. No new names going into the portal from the Virginia team. No signees, at least announced as of this recording on Thursday afternoon. But you wrote a column last night going into all the details about who UVA's reached out to, how things are progressing in that sense. Give us the latest.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Chris. The names keep popping up and disappearing and people committing various places. But Virginia still hasn't landed one as of yet. And as far as we know, the three that exited the program haven't signed anywhere yet either. So the one guy that I've found intriguing is Armon Franklin, a 6'4 sophomore shooting guard at Indiana. Virginia, Illinois, and Indiana are in the running for him. Apparently, he left when the former coach left, and the new coach is trying to get him back. So we'll see how that goes. But I think there's one thing that weighs in Virginia's favor is that of all the factors he listed in wanting to go join another program or rejoin Indiana was that this kid really, really wants to play in the NBA. He wants to be developed to where he can do that for the rest of his playing career. And what better place to go and be developed than Virginia and Tony Bennett? We've seen that happen a lot in recent years. Yeah. And this kid, Chris, you'll like this about him. He's not only a 42% shooter from the three-point line, he can defend multiple positions. Who does that remind you of in Virginia's program, right? Yeah,
Malcolm Brogdon, DeAndre Hunter, Braxton Key come to mind. I mean, guys, and that's what really made that team in 2019 especially so different. They, you know, Tony could put guys out there who could guard one to five. So you give him another guy like that who could also put the ball in the basket. Hey, that's DeAndre Hunter right there.
Exactly. And this kid, Franklin, he was one of the most improved players in the Big Ten last year. He averaged 11.4 points per game, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.2 steals per game, and played about 30 minutes a game. So he was a valuable part of that team, which had its shortcomings, but it wasn't because of him, because he was one of their best players. And, wow, I'm thinking he would look pretty good in a Virginia uniform. Another guy that we're keeping a strong watch on is Jaden Gardner, the forward from East Carolina, who was just tremendous this past year. He's a strong scorer, a strong rebounder. He had some physicality. He had a list of about 15 schools, and he eliminated some really good schools, some good basketball programs, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, A&M, Oklahoma State, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Pitt, Georgia Tech, Boston College. He eliminated all those. His final list of five is Virginia, NC State, Miami, Arkansas, and LSU. I kind of think it's going to come down to between Virginia and NC State. And I think, again, in his Zoom meeting with Tony Bennett and Jason Williford, they expressed how much he is a player of need for them. They really need to recruit a physical forward to help that front court next season. And they also talked about how they can develop his talent to make it to the NBA. They believe he's a future NBA player. So if they could somehow get Gardner and Franklin in that program, it would be terrific. I think he'll probably make an announcement sometime within the next week. No timetable on Franklin. I'm sure Indiana's recruiting the heck out of him right now to stay or return. Another kid that's intriguing that wasn't on our radar earlier is going to make his announcement Sunday. He's got an all-transfer portal name, Flanderous Fleming, 6'4", senior shooting guard from Charleston Southern. He averaged 20 points a game this past season, 7.4 rebounds, and he really picked up his game, particularly as a shooter this past season. Apparently, he's down to UVA, NC State, and Texas A&M, which is kind of the odd man out, I think. I think it's probably going to come down to Virginia and NC State as well. So those are the three I think we really got to keep a watch on. And then everybody's still wondering about what Kessler's going to do after leaving Carolina. Rumors have him tied to Gonzaga. I know Virginia's recruited him hard. And then now Hubert Davis, now that he's the new coach at Carolina, has publicly said that he wants him back badly, and they're going to go after him with everything they got. So it's going to be interesting to see what develops there, Chris.
You know, one thing that interests me too, I've been pouring through that transfer list. The number as of when we're recording this podcast on Thursday afternoon is at 1280. So it's slowed down. We were around 1180 last week. So the number of new kids has definitely slowed to a trickle. And now it's just a matter of, you know, schools finding fits and players finding fits, student athletes finding fits. When I was writing a piece last week, though, actually I wrote something about Johnny Juzang, another guy who got away, if you want to say. He had narrowed Virginia down when he was coming out of high school. Virginia was on his list of Final Four. He ended up going to Kentucky. Didn't work out there, only got 12 minutes a game, kind of fell out of favor towards the end of his freshman season. Goes to UCLA, which worked out for him great. He had 29 in that loss to Gonzaga in the Final Four game last weekend. Had a great tournament, 23 points a game in the tournament, 16 points a game this season. And what I was looking for when I was finishing that column out was, all right, so maybe it wasn't such a bad thing because he was only going to be a 1 or 2 year guy anyway, because he's an NBA player. Anybody who watched him in his tournament, he's an NBA player. And so I was looking on the NBA draft list, and you know, I saw his name, and then I saw Jay Huff and Sam Hauser's name. And then I kept seeing another name of actually above all those names, and it was Trey Murphy III. And so we may not lose another kid to the transfer portal, but and you know, there's been talk about whether Murphy will enter his name into the draft and at least get the evaluation. But you know, I've seen some mock drafts not have him going in either of the first two rounds. I've seen some have him go high in the second round. So we may not be done in terms of roster movement, just not in the transfer portal, maybe the NBA draft.
Yeah, I think he'll probably test the waters if he's getting that kind of a rating, and see at least what the NBA coaches and GMs and scouts think about his game, give him feedback before he makes a decision. But wow, that would be tough to lose him on top of all those other guys, but it could be why they're going after Franklin, a 6'4 shooting guard. So
it could very well be. And the other thing I would say too, though, to Virginia fans who are now fretting, because it's not bad enough news. You lose the three kids you lost last week, including, you know, the two centerpieces of your last two recruiting classes in Casey Morcell and Jabri Abdur-Rahim. You lose an energy guy in Justin McCoy. And now you may lose, you know, who knows, you may lose Trey Murphy III too. When you look at other program situations, they're not great either. You know, the fact that we mentioned last week, there's an average of three kids per school that are in the transfer portal. That number's gone up a little bit in the last week. But then you look at, for example, Gonzaga, they're going to lose their top three guys. You start looking, you know, you've got a lot of schools, not just the transfer portal, but NBA draft, that are going to be affected. Florida State has two guys who are projected as late first round, early second round picks, you know, from within the ACC. So all the turmoil at Carolina, you know, whether or not they convince Kessler to stay and some other guys to maybe hang around. So next year's, we don't know yet, and we're not going to know for a while what next year is going to be like. So you know, for those Virginia fans who are on message boards commenting on jerryratcliffe.com and augustfreepress.com about how the sky is falling as far as basketball is concerned, just wait it out a little bit. It might be a few weeks before we can really get a sense on how 2021-2022 is going to go.
Yeah, it takes a while, not just for the coaches to find out who they want to go after, but for the kids to decide. As you mentioned, there's way over 1,000 players in the transfer portal. So can you imagine being a coach? How overwhelming is that, just looking at who's available and who might fit your program and your needs? And your needs are shifting all the time because, like you said, you think somebody's going to be back and all of a sudden they're gone. And for the kids, just taking Gardner for as an example, I mean, he just cut his list to 5. He had to choose between, essentially 20 schools or more as to where he thinks he can play and develop his game to become an NBA player. And, how he'll fit into their system, who he's going to be competing for playing time against in that program, all sorts of things. There's a lot to consider. So, yeah, I wouldn't panic at all. I think I just think it takes time. It takes two or three weeks, it seems like, as a minimum for most of the guys who are really good. A couple of them already probably have an idea where they want to go and jumped quickly. But I think for the majority of these guys, particularly the good ones, you're making a big decision on where you're going to spend the rest of your career, and is it going to help you get to the NBA? And do you like the coach? And are they loaded at that position? Or am I going to step right in as a starter? A lot of concerns, and as they say, at least for Virginia, I don't know about some schools out there, but they say it's not just a four-year decision for these guys. It's probably 3 or less.
Yeah.
It's a 40-year decision because, you may not make it to the NBA. And if you do, you might not make it there for a while. So you got to have a life plan.
Exactly. Yeah. This is where you're graduating from. Most likely you're getting a degree from the school you make the decision on. And when you're in high school, you've got, they're starting to reach out to you when you're in 8th and 9th grade. And you've got some time to make that call. And now you've got, from 2 or 3 years, you're going to 2 or 3 weeks. That is not easy to make your life decision, even though you're a little older, a little wiser, and a little smarter. We'll have, obviously follow jerryratcliffe.com, augustfreepress.com, because we'll try to have the latest as soon as the news gets out there. We're scouring that transfer portal and Twitter and Instagram and all that, trying to get the latest directly from the sources. So we also have, of course, we're in the middle of spring practice at UVA, and check out our websites, jerryratcliffe.com, augustafreepress.com, for, the UVA folks are doing a great job again. We're not there personally like in normal years with practice and post-practice scrums and that kind of thing, but they're making it easy for us. They're giving us kind of position by position, we can do Zooms with them and get in there and ask the questions we would ask anyway. And so, yeah, we have a lot of stuff to write about with football. I want to highlight, though, Jerry, we got something coming up tomorrow that's going to be really special, going back to basketball, an interview that you'll be doing with Ann Holland, the wife of longtime UVA coach and then athletics director Terry Holland. And, man, I'm looking forward to that one. That's going to be a great podcast.
Yeah, I've known Ann Holland for, since 1982, and what a great lady she is and has been all these years. And she's going to share a lot of great stories and inside information, her prom date with Terry and how that changed both of them's lives forever. And she's finally going to clear it up for all you Wahoo fans who have been wondering all these years, and you've heard various versions of the Terry Holland, Ann Holland dog named Dean. She's going to clear up that whole story because a lot of people have gotten it wrong, including Sports Illustrated over the years. She's going to tell you the real story. So you don't want to miss that one. There's a lot of stuff in this interview that you're not going to want to miss, but that's one that's for the ages right there, because it's been told and retold incorrectly for so long.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag, Jerry. We've already recorded the interview. I was, I'm lucky. I'm the first person who gets to listen to it because you were actively participating. All I did was record and listen, and boy, I had a smile on my face that whole hour. The Dean Dog story is great. The stories about Ralph in the basement, I'll just say it that way and leave it at that. Ralph in the Holland's basement were great. Trying to think what else. The development of John Paul Jones Arena was a really fascinating story, I thought. And then her impression of Lefty Giselle, or at least an attempt at it. But she actually did a pretty good Lefty, I thought. It sounded pretty authentic.
Yeah, she also addresses Terry's bout with dementia. It's a very touching moment. And tells us about Terry's flirtation with being Kentucky's head basketball coach.
Which is a story you'd written 30 plus years ago. A story I was still a high school senior when that was happening. He was never I started at UVA in the fall of 1990, so never got to be there on grounds when he was the coach as a student there. But I didn't even know that story, and so and I think you even said that there were some details that maybe you knew the basics of it, but there were even some details she tells us that were beyond what you knew at the time.
Yeah, he when I asked him about it, he blew it off as being insignificant, as head coaches often do. But she tells us it was a lot more serious than that. And you know, she also talks about why he got out of coaching, what prompted that, and did he leave too soon? And all kinds of great stories that if you're a Virginia fan, especially if you go back as far as I do and Chris, or perhaps even longer, I know when I speak to the Virginia Basketball Club, I think I'm the youngest guy in the room, so I'm sure all those people will really enjoy it as well. But yeah, you don't want to miss that one.
It is definitely a must listen to. We've done some really fun ones in the last few weeks, and this is the one that was the most. I mean, you know, Terry, Ricky Stokes, Ralph Sampson, they told a lot of good stories. This was just packed, an hour full of stuff that was all new to me. So. If you're out there, you're listening, you're like me, a fan, you got to listen to this. This is top notch. So,
yeah. And I'd like to go ahead and mention a couple of sponsors, of our podcast now, Aberdeen Barn, wonderful place, the Virginia's finest steakhouse. And, Chris and I can attest to that. We and our better halves, spent New Year's Eve there, with a wonderful meal.
The steak melts in your mouth. It's so good. You don't even have to chew it. It's so good. And you want more. That's all I remember.
and it's never empty. So it's rare that you ever get to go around and see all the incredible UVA photos hanging up in there, but you never know who you might bump into that place. And Angela takes a lot of great pride in giving you the best dining experience that you can have. So visit Aberdeen Barn. Also UVA Orthopedics. We have great doctors from UVA Ortho and Sports Medicine showing up for a segment on our podcast weekly. Siobhan Statuta will be up in a minute. And like to thank Blue Ridge Bank as well. Their commercial will be playing sometime during the remainder of the broadcast.
Yes, after this break, we're going to come back with Siobhan Statuta. We're going to talk running with the doctor at UVA Sports Medicine, and that's coming up after this break.
It's our honor and privilege again this week to welcome back this guest. She's been on several of our previous radio shows, and now she joins us on our Jerry Ratcliffe podcast. And let's bring in Siobhan Statuta from UVA Sports Medicine. And Siobhan, how are you?
Haven't seen you in a while. Good afternoon. It's a gorgeous day. I'm excited to be here, and I'm super excited to be on the podcast. I'm working my way up in this world. I love the podcast.
We're super excited to have you. For those of you that don't know, Siobhan works with several UVA athletic teams, and she's also heavily involved in the running community and the running clinic. Is that the official title?
The Runner's Clinic. Yes.
Runner's Clinic. Yes.
Yep. At UVA.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about some of that this afternoon. And I guess, Siobhan, with the COVID restrictions getting pulled back a little bit to where things are gradually opening up a little bit, and the glorious sunshine and warm temperatures we're getting the last few days, I still got to get out on the golf course. It's killing me. Do you have some tips on people who are running, walking, or whatever kind of activities they might be getting back to after several months of rust indoors, how to keep from injuring themselves?
Yeah, I do. You are absolutely right. It I don't know if it was two or three weeks ago, there was a day that the weather changed and the sun was out and the vaccine is becoming more available. And it was a palpable difference in the air. And all of a sudden that day, I started noticing how many more, exponentially more numbers of people getting outdoors, walking, jogging. So Jerry, that's a really good question, because who doesn't want to get outside and enjoy this weather? And we've been cooped up, and we've been not just cooped up because of the winter, but because of COVID. So everybody's been indoors. And so I think this year of all years, it's going to be probably more important to keep in mind that they're at risk for injuring themselves if they go too fast. So a couple of things, the one thing that we see commonly with this time of year is that people are trying to get bathing suit ready, or just with the weather, they want to start exercising more. Taking those intentions and being very mindful and careful about how they go about doing it. So go about it in a very thoughtful way. The excitement levels are high, energy level is high, but rein yourself back a little bit. So if you do too much too quickly, that's when we get into problems. We get into problems with soft tissues, so strains, we can get tendonitis, and we can also injure our bones, which can, in the case of a runner or a walker, even at some points, can result in a stress fracture. So just taking it easy, be mindful and plan out, and we can break that down a little bit more in a few minutes.
Yeah, I'll jump in. This winter I was a wimp. The last several winters I've been running avidly for 7 years, and this winter I decided it was too cold. I don't maybe it's old age is settling in for me. It wasn't too cold. I just let it sink in that it was too cold, and so I've been Pelotoning. So I've been keeping my fitness level up, my cardio level up, but I do know that the first couple of times I went out to run, that even though the good times on a Peloton were there. I've got to dial back my mental expectations more than anything. And that's the hardest part for people who are runners, and they see this great weather and they're thinking in their head, hey, I run 6 or 8 miles a day. You can't just start out running 6 or 8 miles a day. That can be the disaster for you.
Yep. Absolutely right. And it is, Chris, you bring up two really great points right there. Number one is to be mindful that even in this past year, so we've been indoors, that means we've been sitting more. We haven't been as active. We haven't been moving around as much. So even though, let's say last spring before COVID struck, or even last spring, let's say you were running the 5 to 6 miles, you've altered your exercise into a totally different venue. You've been biking. That's a very different thing than pounding, the repetitive pounding of running. And so Peloton has become such a huge, huge movement now, and it's wonderful. But to be able to do a 1 hour Peloton workout does not translate to an hour of running. And the other thing is, people will find that they want to do Peloton one day and then they want to run the next day. Well, that's both of those workouts use your legs quite a bit. So you're predisposing yourself to additional injuries in the legs. So really good point. Just be very mindful, leaving yourself days in between to allow your body to recover a little bit.
And I'll also ask, last year I felt like even though I don't feel like I'm that competitive as a runner, I do look at, you sign up for a 10K, you sign up for a half marathon, whatever, and it gives you something to train for. And without having that, my running wasn't as good. Now this year, presumably maybe later this year, we will have some races again, maybe in the summer, maybe in the fall. And so this could be a good thing. Obviously for people who do use those as milestones and something to train for, the fact that there may be some things later this year for people to shoot towards can be good for us to get back into the same shape we were before.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think we're blessed to be in this town of Charlottesville, where even through the pandemic, there were races that were able to be held. But you're right, it was a different style. Everything was ramped back quite a bit. We hope that there will be more and more races, and you can see that there are virtual options as well. But absolutely, setting a realistic goal for the state that you're in right now, take a good hard look at, what is my fitness level? What have I done the last few months? And then, okay, maybe I'll start out with a 5K in 2 to 3 months and work your way slowly towards that. That would be probably the wisest thing to do, instead of going gangbusters for this new goal.
I was going to ask you if you have a running president over there at the UVA, Dr. Jim Ryan. Apparently he's a strong member of the running community. Does he ever come to you for tips?
Well, that's for a HIPAA, I can't say, but no, I have seen him run by me many times. I have seen him. We cover a lot of the community races, the Runners Clinic. We offer the medical care. And so we have seen him a lot. He's impressive. And to think about how much is on his plate to begin with, and he and I am totally speculating, the way his world has incorporated running, no matter what, when you look at the events of what's happened in Charlottesville and at UVA, the man is still running throughout these, what I perceive to be extraordinarily stressful times. So he is a really great role model to see how important physical activity is to incorporate into your regular life.
I've got two Run With Jim shirts, and I can speak to how good of a runner he is. I've run a 10K in 6:52 pace, and when he starts off these Run With Jims, he's gone. I don't see him after he starts. So he's not just out there plodding along. He's not doing lazy laps. He's running hard. He's good at this.
And I think we've discussed this before, Siobhan, on some of the radio shows, but I imagine that's one way he maybe handles all that stress. It's just that's so. A release. Yeah.
I think so. And it's admirable, because that's exactly how you want to do it. You want to make it the piece of your life that is non-negotiable. You're taking care of yourself. You're taking care of yourself physically, yet you're taking care of yourself mentally, which is so huge. We've talked about mental health, particularly in this COVID era, but in order to do that's so great. I remember I was in medical school and I had signed up for a race, and it ended up to be close to the time that I had a big final exam. And the first thing that I gave up was this race, because I was so worried about this test. And I've learned slowly over time, it's imperative to carve out time for yourself. So you don't have to be running the marathons. You don't even have to be running races, but take stock of where you are. And you guys, today is the perfect example. Beautiful weather, trees are blooming. It's nice. It's this sense of freedom. Get outside, go for a walk. And it doesn't have to be a quote unquote exercise. Just get out, walk, and get outdoors and enjoy it. And leave yourself a little bit of time. So if you go out and you break a sweat, give yourself a day off the next day. See how your body responds. Give your body the chance to recover. If you're sore, that's what we want. But then that's also an indication that your body needs a little bit of time to recover. And that will help you prevent injuring yourself. Jerry, I saw somebody this morning, you mentioned golf. And we were talking about our, we have a mutual friend. Well, golf, it's exciting to get out there. You take a lesson, you learn one tip, you do one maneuver over and over and over, and that too sets you up for an overuse type injury. So it's great to get out outdoors. Pull the reins back on yourself, and try to be mindful about that. You don't want to do too much.
And I know one of the things that you wanted to cover in today's interview was stress fractures, which can result from, like you just said, doing too much too soon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, stress fractures, let's go back to the point where I said, if you feel sore People love that soreness after a workout. That indicates that it's you've accomplished what you want. That soreness means that you're on your way to improving your state. But equally as important to working out is allowing your body to catch up to that. So the recovery aspect of that is imperative. How do you do that? Hydration, nutrition, really good sleep, and being careful to not overwork those same muscles. And similarly, the bones underneath the muscles. So in order to propel us, the muscles all in our legs and our body are attached to bones. So when those muscles contract, it pushes us forward, but the muscles are attached to the bones. If I think a common pitfall is that people will start out a little bit too aggressive. So they haven't run for 6 months. They'll go out and try to run 3 miles. They're feeling great. It's awesome. And then all of a sudden they finish this. It's another nice day. The following day they do too much and the muscles tugging over and over on those bones can create irritation. And on a microscopic level, that bone is breaking down, which is part of working out, but you're not giving the body enough time to repair itself. So few pointers. So if you don't listen to that, that will perpetuate into a stress fracture. And the stress fracture is on a continuum. It begins with shin splints if in the lower legs. If you continue to exercise, it turns into stress fractures, which are microscopic. And then there can be an actual fracture line if you continue to ignore it. Ways to avoid that, because you don't want to get a stress fracture. A stress fracture requires total shutting down for 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes with boots, sometimes with crutches, depending on where it is in the body. In the worst case scenario, they'll even require surgeries. So be careful to have a really good, this goes back to being mindful about things. You want consistency. You don't want to go out of the gate, you know, sprinting out of the gate and just doing so much. What you want to do is think about this as a long-term project. Run every other day, for example. Never increase your weekly mileage more than 20%. So you're thinking consistency, low grade, slow consistency, and adding a little by little by little. Setting a realistic goal. Chris, you mentioned races picking up this fall. Well, if that is something of interest to you, or even walking one of these race courses, that's wonderful. A 5K, an 8K, a 10K, a half marathon, just start walking now and start building a base. And then make sure you leave recovery days.
Awesome. You're inspired me. I'm going to go walk my dog now.
You should walk to the golf course.
He's staring at me like, when are you taking me out?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Chris, any more questions for Siobhan about running?
No, she just sort of told my life story, though, it sounds like, at least the last few years. You push runners. I mean, avid runners push yourself sometimes too far, and you've got to be smart. And that's great advice.
Yeah, it's hard to break out of the weekend warrior scene too. You know, when we were young, we could bounce back. Our bodies did bounce back. And then when you grow up a little bit and get a regular job and you're working 5 days a week, and then you have this free period, you want to just pack in as much as you can. And health is wonderful. You want to do that, but sometimes you can just lose track of sense, especially if you're getting that endorphin rush from exercising, and pretty quickly you can get injured. So again, you know, you're in it, the listeners, you're in this wonderful town that has so much information at your fingertips, so many people who want to help you. UVA has, you know, UVA Orthopedics and Runners Clinic, and we have running stores and just running groups, and it's not difficult to start out and get the information that you need.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Siobhan. We really appreciate your knowledge and your insight, and you're a great addition to our podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
You guys, I'm honored. Thank you so much. Thanks, Chris. Thank you, Jerry.
I'd like to introduce to our audience Brian Plum, CEO of Blue Ridge Bank, one of our sponsors for the Jerry Ratcliffe podcast. And we really appreciate them investing in and believing in our podcast and in my website, jerryratcliffe.com. Brian, welcome, and tell us a little bit about Blue Ridge Bank and what makes it so special.
Yeah, absolutely, Jerry. So Blue Ridge Bank's been around since 1893, making it one of Virginia's oldest community banks. And following a recent merger with Bay Banks of Virginia, Virginia Commonwealth Bank, now also one of the largest community banks in Virginia. And we're able to bring our innovative approach and that size to bear for our clients. We have a focus that puts our clients and our communities at the top of our priority list, and recognize that everything we do, we're able to do only because of our clients and the communities we serve.
I know you take a lot of pride in personal service.
Absolutely. Again, we recognize that everything we do and are able to do starts with taking care of the people we serve, and that comes with our clients and the communities, and also our commitment to doing everything we can to help folks out. You see that evidenced by our response with Paycheck Protection Program that was implemented as a response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our bank has helped in the most recent round, over 4,000 small businesses obtain the financing and the funds they need to ensure their survival.
And one of the things that makes Blue Ridge Bank really unique is something, I don't know if any other bank in America does this, but you guys have a great jackpot for your customers.
Exactly, Jerry. Yeah, we have the BRB jackpot account, and that account is a way to reward savers and encourage them to put money back for life's future needs. We all recognize that in the United States, we have a significant personal savings crisis. And so we launched this account back in 2015. We were the first bank in the country to launch this product, and we did it to play a role and a part in helping to solve the country's financial savings crisis. And so if you put money into this account, you get an entry for every $25 that you deposit into the account. And this year, the grand prize is $100,000. So similar to a lottery, you know, you buy the ticket, you get paid. Unlike the lottery, here, if you deposit the money, you increase your savings account. Even if you don't win the $100,000 at the end of the year, you still have additional savings for life's needs.
That's great. And for those interested in perhaps opening up an account or finding out more about Blue Ridge Bank, tell them how to find out more information.
Absolutely, Jerry. You can find our website at www.mybrb.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.